So we're still talking about the altar and the painting that you might put on your altar. Thank you. And then he's going to quote, Do pe ma kapo le kyang. Pedma means what? Pedma. Lotus, right? Kapo means white. Okay. What's the most famous mantra in Tibet? Omani Padme Hum, which is a mantra for partner practice. The Padma is the lady and the Mani is the man. The jewel is the man and the lotus is the lady. So anyway, that's a long story. So every Tibetan is saying that all day. Padma Kapo Le Kyang, Deshe Kusot Sigma Chipala Chukshimpai. Oh, by the way, if you want to know the Buddhist position on, Lord Buddha's position on eating meat, that's the White Lotus Sutra. Okay, that's what they call the Lotus Sutra or the Sutra of the White Lotus. There's many pages there about eating meat, and it says don't. All right, so if anybody asks, you know. So I asked my teacher once, why do Tibetan monks eat meat? And he said, in ancient India, the monks, and even in Thailand, if you go to Thailand, you can see it, but monks go to door to door with a big bowl. I went with the monks in Sri Lanka one day. The bowl is this big. And they put in a whole dinner with ice cream stacked on top. And it takes like 2 hours to eat it. But anyway, you were supposed to accept whatever they threw in your bowl. So if they threw meat in your bowl, you were supposed to eat it without complaining. And then when they got to Tibet, where they say they don't have enough vegetables, at, I don't know, 10,000 feet or whatever it is, then they said it was okay to eat meat. And in recent years, in my monastery, there's been a movement not to eat meat. And officially, none of the monks at Sera May eats meat. They don't serve meat anymore in the monastery. I think people still eat it at home, but that's a long story. One monk told me, I don't kill animals, I just buy meat. You know? And I grew up in the farm workers movement here in Phoenix. We got people to stop eating lettuce that was, you know, farm workers who weren't paid fairly. We got people to stop eating the lettuce of those companies. And then they were going to collapse, and they started paying the farm workers a decent wage. So you can affect. If nobody bought meat, there wouldn't be any meat being sold, right? That's just a basic thing. And then I asked that person, that lama, I said, so if somebody offers me a stolen radio, it's okay to buy it, right? He said, no, you can't buy a stolen radio. Then I said, but the meat is stolen. If it's not killed, at least it's stolen. It's still stolen goods, isn't it? And because the word in Tibetan for stolen is what? Ma, jin, Majin Lin, which means you took it, but it wasn't given to you, right? So meat is like that. Anyway, in the White Lotus Sutra, they list every possible kind of meat, chicken meat, cow meat, goat meat. It's like 50 kinds of meat, ending with human flesh. And then they say, don't eat it. Lord Buddha says, don't eat it. So that's the original. That was Lord Buddha's position. Anyway, I like this particular sutra. It'd be nice to work on it someday together in our free time. Deshe kusuk sigma chipala. You can hear the poetry, right? Deshe kusuk sigma chipala. Chukshimpai semki tepan tenayang. Terarim ki sange chewa tong. She sung. Deshe kusuk means a representation of Lord Buddha, whether it be a statue or a painting. Signa Chipala means painted on the side of a wall as a mural, okay? Signa Chipala. Chukshimpai Semki Tenayang. Even if you gaze upon an image, a mural of Lord Buddha's image painted on a wall with thoughts that are upset or angry, okay? With angry thoughts, not with a pure mind, okay? Teda Rimki Sangye Chewa Tong. Eventually, because of the seed of that moment of looking at the mural, you will see 10 million Buddhas. Okay? That seed of looking once with an angry state of mind at a Buddhist painting, will cause you to meet 10 million Buddhas. Okay, that's the quotation from the White Lotus Sutra. Shesung, Dong Lomar Chunayang, Dong Lomar Chunayang, She Nangyang, Sung Yun Ditar Chung. Then he says, if you go look at the original sutra, the wording is slightly different, but it doesn't change the meaning. So I did. I went and looked at the original sutra because we have it all on computer, right? The Tibetans have been, the refugees have been typing for 25 years. They finished all the sutras. There are 4,600 sutras and shastras, and they finished them. So I just looked it up to find out what was the other reading. What was the original reading? The original reading is like this. Dejek Rinsel, the whole thing goes like this. I just thought you'd like to hear the whole thing. Dejek Rinsel Lani Ching Se Dang Xionian Chik Ding Bai Da Chung Nam Meto Chik Tsam Kini Chepa Dang Dejek Su Da Chik. The whole verse is longer. And it says, Dejek Rinsel Lani Ching Se Dang. When a Buddha passes from this world, they don't die like normal people. They disappear. And then there are these little, you know, because she dragged them around the world. They're called ringsel. And they look like bone or ivory. And they're shaped like an anise seed maybe or something like that. They're about that size, like the sprinkles on a cupcake. Maybe that's what they really are. It's called a ringsel. And it's believed that when an enlightened being passes, that's all that's left. So obviously these things are very valuable and people trade in them. And I'm sure people make them in North Tibet somewhere with plastic or, you know. But of course there's big fights about who's got the real ringsel. And anyway, if you even made a small offering to a ringsel, not even to a Buddha, okay? So Lama Supa had a project to take ringsels around the world and show them to people. And they went, they're still going, I don't know, many countries. People really were affected by them. Ching Se Dan, Silnian Chik Din Bai Da Chung Am. Even if you take a single, you know those Tibetan ting shot? Ding. They use them in yoga studios more than in Tibet. You knock them, they're called ting shot. Even to hit them once and offer it to the Buddha. Metok Chik Tam Kini Chepa Dang, even if you offer a single flower, one flower to a Buddha statue. Deshek Suk Dang Signo Chipala, even if you see images of the Buddha. By the way, the original says plural, is plural. Okay, even if you see images of the Buddha painted on a wall. Tukshin Pai Semki Chunayang, and even if you, it doesn't say look at it, it says if you offer something to it. If you set an offering in front of that mural, Dedar Rimki Sangye Chewatong, that part's the same. You will see 10 million Buddhists, okay? So this is, he says, look, it doesn't matter whether you look at it or you offer something to it, it's the same, okay? Dedar Sangye Gikula Troshin Tenayang, even if you are upset or angry and you happen to look at a Buddha image, Tenyin Dedar Sungna, you get those kinds of benefits. That's going to happen to you. You will meet real Buddhas. Tata Rangre Depe Jelna. If we rather gel what? Meet the image. Meaning if you approach it respectfully and you bow to that image, right? Depe Jelna Payin Detabu Lu Chung. Then of course you would get extraordinary benefits if you were not angry, but rather had a heart full of faith and devotion and you bowed to the image. Okay? Pakpa Shari Pu Sangye Ki Chok Sung Du Kyur Ne Kung Lu Dan Dewa Mepa Chung Wa Yang. Then there's a beautiful story. It's called, how should you say? Who spoke the Heart Sutra? A sutra is required to be spoken by a Buddha, but it was spoken by Shariputra. Okay, one of the Buddha's main disciples, Shariputra. And there were two close disciples of Lord Buddha. One was called Shariputra, and one was Maudgalyayana. And these two were very close to Lord Buddha and stayed with Lord Buddha most of the time. Okay, so now he's going to talk about what happened to, how did they get that karma? Shariputra in particular, who speaks the Heart Sutra. So why is it still a sutra? Sutra is supposed to be spoken by a Buddha. Yeah, Lord Buddha was manipulating him, okay, and causing him to say the sutra. Anyway, Bhagwat Sharipu Sangye ki Choksung Dukyur. Say Choksung. Choksung. So there's a special word in Buddhism for those two disciples. They have their own name as a pair. They're called Choksung. Chok means supreme, right? And Sung means the two, the pair. So they're often just referred to as the supreme pair. Shariputra and Maudgalyayana, okay? You know the word Sung because it comes in Sungjuk, which is Tantric Buddhahood, okay? Tantra is supposed to be, according to Buddhism, Buddhist Tantra, as opposed to Hindu Tantra, is supposed to be the only way to get enlightened in one lifetime. And they give it a new name in the scriptures. They don't call it enlightenment. They call it the union of the two, meaning an angel's body and an angel's mind. Okay? But that's another story. So, di sung tu kyur ne ku ngu dan dewa mepa chungwa. Shariputra never left the side of the Buddha. Okay? After he became one of the two, he never again left the Buddha's side, okay, in his life. When, how did that happen? How did he get the karma? When sangye ki kusuk rimo chipala ngotsa nyam ki tepe, there was an incident in his former life or earlier in his life where he saw an image of a Buddha painted, okay? And he looked at it with ngotsar. Ngotsar means wonder. He looked at this image with wonder. And then the karmic result of that was that he could always be inseparable from Lord Buddha during the latter part of his time on this earth, okay? Now he's going to tell you this story, and I kind of like it, okay? This is the story. I didn't know this story until I, you know, studied this book. Dayang Pakpa Sharipu. He's called a Pakpa. What's that mean? Someone who has seen emptiness directly. Sharipu Mun Pangmi Shiki Kyawar Shepar. In a previous life, when he had been born as a Pangmi. Pangmi can mean like a Pony Express rider. Okay? In English, it's like a messenger. A synonym for that is Ponya. Which in the secret teachings is a name for your partner, for your spiritual partner, a messenger. Okay? So Bangmi is a special word. He was a Bangmi. He was a messenger. He was out on a message. He's sending a message. They didn't have telephones. You sent a guy with a note. Okay? In my monastery for, I don't know, 20 years, they just had Bangmis. They were the little guys, the 7-year-old monks. And their only function in the monastery is as a telephone. So you give the kid a little note. You say, run across the other side of the monastery, give this to Geshe so-and-so, you know. And he takes off. Then he starts playing marbles halfway and loses the message. These are all interesting things that happen. Okay. Papa Sharipu Ngun Bangmi Shiki Kewa Shepa. Nuk Chik Lakang Tomba Shiki Nang Dude. One night, he got off his horse, and the only place he had to stay was in an abandoned chapel, okay? Like a small chapel, stone chapel, in the middle of the plains in Tibet. He got off his horse, it was dark, and he found this abandoned chapel. Depa marme shindu sawa chene, he lit a very clear butter lamp. Klamla dopa gyak shindu. And then he had to do a repair on his boots. Okay, he was fixing the heel on his boots. Shindu ngyao so e kap. And he was like taking a break. Gyang lok su deshin shep e ku su ki debrir tong me. While he was fixing the heel on his shoe, he happened to look up on the wall of the chapel and he saw a painting of Lord Buddha. He saw a Buddha painted on the wall. Wow, he looks cool. All right. He was like, wow, he looks really great. He's amazing, you know. He didn't know who it was, you know. It's like, wow, that's amazing. It would be nice to meet him in person, you know. He thought that. He just thought it to himself. And all night long, he kept, like he fell in love with the painting on the wall. And he kept saying to himself, I wish I could meet him. I wish I could meet him. I wish I could meet him. Then he died, of course. And then, not that time, but eventually. And that was the karma. Just looking at that painting on the night that he was fixing his shoe on the way to send somebody a message, he had the karma never to be separated from Lord Buddha's side in his later life. Okay? Kuten chepdebe imbasu kuten nam rangre dam sang dam dang sang sok su thoma de chugyung gi ting in top na choki tukur jelshing. Okay, this gets into a really heavy thing and it's on your homework. Okay, we said there were five steps in the spiritual evolution of every human being. They're always the same. Okay. Number one was what? Some kind of disaster in your life. It wakes you up. Okay, my best students over the last 30 years have been the ones whose mother hanged themselves in the basement, or somebody came in and shot somebody, or their child was run over by a semi-truck at the stop on the highway. You know, like that. People like that. People have had a really hard time. Those are the best students because they're very serious. They don't fool around. I had a student who had AIDS in New York, and he just came to me and he said, "Look, I don't have time to fool around. I'm dying. I need to know what's going to happen, and I want to practice now. And I don't need superfluous stuff. I need the guts of the stuff because I have a year." And he died. We took care of him at night, all night, for months, and then he died. So first step is something happens to make you serious. Second step, what? You understand, you get an understanding that stuff is coming from you. Okay? Direct emissive. Third, you see emptiness directly, 20 minutes, right? By the way, I didn't tell you 4 and 5. 4 is after you see emptiness directly, you use that on your own negative emotions for many years after that, okay? Basically, it boils down to every time your boss yells at you, you understand that she is coming from you, and then slowly that makes you incapable of anger. I call it the water on the bathroom floor syndrome, which is what? I mean, I used to live in New Jersey, right? And it was cold. And I had one good pair of wool socks. And so I would go into the bathroom like at 10 o'clock and there'd be water all over the floor. Somebody took a shower and poured water all over the floor, you know? So then I would step in the water and then my feet were miserable for the first half of the morning. And then I would go out to talk to the monks who were having breakfast. I was the cook for 8 years, okay? Because I was the youngest monk. So I'm out there and I'm like, okay, who took a shower this morning? Just tell me, you know? And I'm angry. I'm like upset. I'm like, I told you like 10 times, you're in America now, you know? You have to close there's this curtain thing, you know? It's not like some bucket of cow dung, you know? And they're like, everybody looks around, and then one of them said, oh, Mike, they used to call me Mike, okay? Oh, Mike, you took a shower this morning. And then I'm like, oh, yeah. You know? And then you can be angry at other people for putting water on the kitchen floor, the bathroom floor, but you can't, once you know it's yourself, you just feel foolish, right? You feel dumb. Okay? That's what the fourth path is like. Okay, on the fourth path, every irritating person you meet, you understand directly that they are your shower this morning. You created every... That lady said it today. Wasn't it cool? She's some kind of Buddha, I guess. The homeless shelter lady, she said... What'd she say? She said, there comes a point where you realize that everything you see in a homeless person is coming from you. And so at step number four, you realize it so well that you start to reach nirvana, because nirvana means the place where you can't get angry anymore. Okay? The better you get an understanding where things come from, the less anger you can ever have. Okay? That's just the way it is. Bad things happen around you, unexpected disasters, and a well-trained Buddhist is like, oh, I took a shower this morning. And they don't get upset. You know, the world can collapse around you. You know, I got all these emails today from people I haven't heard of in 30 years, you know, and you're like, it's my fault. I made some kind of karma. Okay. Like that. And you don't get all upset or angry, or you can't blame anybody else for the water on the floor. Okay. It's you. If you keep that up long enough, then step five is you reach nirvana and Buddhahood. Okay. Why did I bring that up? Oh, at step one, which is divided into three or nine levels. Once you reach the higher levels of the disaster stage, okay? Meaning you've been trained for a while now. You've been trained for a while. And if you meditate carefully, you reach Chö Gyun Ki Tingenzin. Say Chö Gyun Ki Tingenzin. Chö Gyun Ki Tingenzin. I like this word. I really like this word. It's a kind of state of mind where everything, every teaching you ever heard in your life starts to pop up in your head at odd moments. Okay? Like something you heard 10 years ago. You can be washing dishes, for example. You know, you can be washing dishes 10 years from now, and it's a spaghetti dish, okay, and you left it for since yesterday. Obviously, you weren't cleaning your room. And there's a stuck piece of spaghetti sauce on the plate, you know, and you have to scrub it, right? You're scrubbing it, and you say, these are like fuzzballs. Fuzzballs! That's my jealousy. Let me get it off. You know, I remember Geshe-la talking about fuzzballs 10 years ago. I haven't thought about the fuzzballs for 10 years. And it's just like the spaghetti stain. You see, like that. And when you reach Chö Gyun Ki Tingenzin, your whole life is cool, because the Buddha starts talking in your head. All the teachings you ever got, they start whispering in your head. It's very beautiful. It's a very beautiful state. And just at odd moments, you start to get angry, and then Geshe-la is saying, you know, he's coming from you. Water on the bathroom floor. And you're like, dang. You know, and like that, okay? So this is Chö Gyun Ki Tingenzin, very famous. And it happens at Soglam. It happens in the first stage, towards the end of the first stage. Okay, so you can look forward to that. It's kind of invasive, actually. Okay. So at that point, you will start to see outer forms of people to get more and more Buddha-like. Okay, the people around you, people you meet, you will start to see glimpses of their divinity. Okay, in their outer form. You will start to get little glimpses of other people as being divine. Okay? Even at the end of the first of the five paths. And that's called, he calls it, Chokichukur gel, right? You know the word gel now. So you will start to meet people. How does it feel? What does it manifest itself as? mostly in teachers, okay? And it doesn't have to be a Buddhist teacher. It could be a yoga teacher. It could be someone who's teaching you woodworking or someone who's teaching you dance. Or it mostly manifests in teachers or in friends who are teaching you stuff. It could be a partner who starts to teach you stuff. And it could be a boss at work who starts to teach you. And you start to get glimpses of them as a Buddha or as a divine being. And what he's trying to say is, if you set holy images around your house and on your altar, and if you gel them frequently, then that's the seed for starting to see people as divine. And that's a pleasure. And that's Tantra. If you want to know what Tantra is, it's nothing more than that. Okay, first stage Tantra, which is called Kirim. It's not some weird sexual, you know, I don't know what those things are. They made them up. Somebody made that up. The first level of Tantra is where you start to see more and more people as divine around you. And you start to see the godness within other people. Okay, and that's Tantra. That's first level Tantra. So the seed for that is planted by putting a picture on your altar and respecting it nicely. Got it? It's cool. It's really cool. So you're not just putting some weird picture on your altar. You are planting seeds like, who did? Shariputra fixing his shoe on the way to, on a horse pony express trip. Okay? So don't treat the altar as a light thing. Make sure you have an altar and put some beautiful images on it, because you are setting yourself up to live among angels. And that's a pleasure. That's a beautiful thing, okay? So do it. All right? And, it's not just some Tibetan custom or something like that. It has deep significance for your future, okay? All right. Kuchuka Jeshin. Sat dambo tomna langur ngus jawin. Longur ngus jawin. When you reach Tonglam, which is which of the path? What number? Number 3. When you see ultimate reality directly, which is the goal of all Buddhist practice, basically. Okay. During that day, and on that occasion also, you meet the Buddha at a higher level. You confirm the existence of Buddhas. On that day that you see emptiness directly, you also directly perceive a Buddha. Who? The first one is somebody else who is already a Buddha. A few minutes later, maybe within half an hour, you see yourself 500 years from now, you see yourself as you will be. Okay? And that's cool. That's one of the four truths. Okay? You see yourself as you will be. On that day, you confirm the existence of enlightened beings. Up till now, you can say you're a Buddhist, but did you ever meet a Buddha? Like, all you got is a bunch of old books that say this guy was around, you know? You can't really say, you could say, I mean, it's reasonable on the debate ground, right? Somebody could say, are you a Buddhist? You'd say, yes. Then they'd say, do you know for sure that Buddhas exist? No, okay? On that day, you know for sure, okay? And only on that day, to be honest. The rest is just hearsay, you know. Legally, you'd have to say hearsay. You know, I trust the people who told me that, but I can't confirm it. I didn't meet them. Okay, on that day you meet them. All right. So what he's saying is, plant the seed now by keeping a holy image on your altar. All right, and that will cause you, after you see emptiness directly, to meet a Buddha directly. Then you can become a real Buddhist. He said, I'm a Buddhist. Did you see them? Yes. They're cool. In fact, I saw myself. Okay? And after that, you can't worry too much about stuff. Okay? Really strange stuff can happen. You're like, okay. You know? Okay. That's okay. But I saw something cooler. Okay? All right. Sadhabha tamna longa jawayin. Dena kumuki dushe jopa kelche sun. Then he wraps up his presentation by saying, when you look at a statue on an altar, reflect that this is the real thing. Okay? That's not just a statue of Jetsonkapa. That's Jetsonkapa. And if you treat it as Jetsonkapa, it will happen faster that you meet these beings all around you. Everyone has divinity in them. We can't see it. We just don't have the karma. If you keep a nice altar, you make that karma faster. And it's a pleasure to be... you walk into a restaurant in New York on 6th Street and 2nd Avenue. Where's Caravan of Dreams? 2nd Avenue? First. At 1st Avenue. And you're having lunch with somebody. And, you know, you say to the... And the waitress is an old Jewish lady. Old and chubby with gray, short gray curly hair, right? I'm just making up a story, okay? And you finish your meal, and then you say, give us the bill, right? And the old Jewish lady looks at you and says, how could I ever present a bill to someone who is practicing the Vajrayogini? You know, and she just turns around and goes back in the kitchen. You know, and then then you leave her an $80 tip. So anyway, those things will happen. Okay? Nice things. It's fun if things like that happen. Okay? Like, it's really nice. Okay? So, it starts with keeping a nice image on your altar. All right? Okay. We finished the first step of the six. The first of the six preliminary practices. Okay? Which is, now you know it has two parts. First one is cleaning up your room, and the second one is making a nice altar. But now you know it's much more than an altar. It's the beginning of a process at the end of which you are meeting angels on a daily basis, okay? And it's nice. It's a sweet thing. You know, you don't have to go, there's a guy where I live, there's a guy, he stands on the side of the road in the middle of the desert all day. And he waves a Bible. He yells on the highway. He yells at people driving by. And I don't know whether to admire him or what. He's in this really beat up cowboy hat, and he's got this huge beard, and he's totally fried by the sun. His skin is like peeling off, and he has a Bible, and he's yelling at the highway. And I don't mean like that. I'm not saying that. Okay, I'm not saying that you go out and knock on doors and tell people if you want to meet angels, you've got to have a Buddha picture on your kitchen table or something. That's not where we're at. I think what I mean to say is gently, quietly, privately, take care of your altar. You don't have to tell anybody. Nobody ever has to see it. But treat it as if they are visitors from another world. And then you will have special experiences in your life. Okay, so we're not talking about Alanis Morissette has this song where she disses. Do you know that song? She disses Buddhists who are keeping makeshift altars in their living room, and I felt bad about that song. It's a much different thing. You know, you can set up a portal to another world in your bedroom in the corner. And just take care of the images properly and honor them properly, and then beautiful things will come. And it's not just a couple of pictures on the table, okay? All right. Okay, we're on to class homework 2 now. So now you can finish all of homework 1, all right? Hopefully we'll do some homework 2 tonight. I'm going to go for another 10 minutes and give you guys a break, okay? Because after that, you're going to be cranky and tired. Okay, so here we go. I enjoy, this is very grounding for me, when I have adversity or things are troubling me, I love to listen to these things. It makes me very happy. Okay, here we go. Nipa chipa yome chinkupa zepa shamba ni. The second of the six preliminary practices before a meditation session is to put forth offerings on the altar. Okay, it could be a flower. It could be a single flower. Okay, whatever it is, after you put the pictures there, or the statues, and the book, and the bell, and the dorje, then you should put some offerings on the altar. Okay, You should put some nice offerings on the altar. And he's going to discuss the offerings. And this is one of the most beautiful discussions in all of Buddhism. You know, what kind of flower is most beautiful? And I just really love it. This is one of the most precious teachings in Buddhism. And it's in this book. You know, this is the source of it. It's so beautiful. Okay, so here we go. He says, by the way, that the offerings are, say, yo man. Yo man. Stillwell's email is what? Rajma, yo. So yo means, in Tibetan, high tone, right? Say yo. Then say yo. Yo means, this is the one here. Yo man means the offerings should have been paid for with honest money, clean money. Okay? And we'll talk about what that means, okay? The offerings have to be clean. The money that you use to buy them should have been made with 100% honesty, okay? Total honesty. That's called yome, okay? Ching, kupa dzepa. Kupa dzepa means they must be beautiful and lovely, okay? They must be lovely. And he's going to go in great length to what those two things mean. And I like it. I think it's really sweet. Okay? So here we go. You ready? Shamba deyan yo meching shepe yo la gyue yo dan kunlongi yo ni. He says you can divide yo into two kinds. What's yo? Yo means dishonesty. Okay? Or wrong livelihood. Money which is gotten from ill means, okay, is called yo. Yo can also mean to deceive somebody or like that, okay? Sneaky ways, okay? Yo. He says there's two kinds of yo in the world. One is gyu and one is kunlong. Gyu yo means the substances of the offering are polluted in some way. They are tainted by some kind of dishonesty, okay? And they should not be offered, okay? The other kind of yo is kunlongi yo. Kunlongi yo means the reason you make the offerings should not be lesser motivation. It must be a pure motivation. Okay? So for an offering to be nice on the altar, the money must have been earned honestly and cleanly. And the offering and then the motivation must not be lesser motivation, like, oh, if somebody sees I have a nice altar, if I have a nice cupcake on my altar, they'll think I'm more spiritual, like that, you know? People will be impressed by the offerings I put on my altar, okay? Like that. That's a defective motivation. Or the substances can be tainted by dishonesty, okay? All right? And we're going to go into it. Gyu yoni chupe gyu de jupe kapsu kyun shupate. What do you call it? Pollution of the substances to be offered refers to when you obtain those offerings, meaning when you went to Safeway or Bosch's, okay, you used money which was ill-gotten, all right? Kapsu kyun shute, and then the offerings became polluted, all right? Rabchung namki. Rabchung means, in this case, monks or nuns, okay? And Lokso ngay gone dupadang. There are five wrong ways of supporting yourself in Tibet, okay? There was a custom. They're called five wrong ways of supporting yourself, okay? And they applied to monks and nuns mostly because they applied to how you relate to your sponsors, okay? I think it's not a big stretch, and I'm looking forward to using this in our business management teachings. I don't think it's a big stretch to apply these five to a business life or your work life or your office, okay? So I'm going to explain to you the traditional five wrong ways of making a living or getting things. But I want you on your homework to apply it to an office situation or to a business situation, okay? To a modern life situation. I'll give you the five for monks and nuns. And then on your homework, it's going to say, give the five for monks and nuns, and take a shot at what that would be in a real life office where you have a job. Okay? All right, here we go. Kimbekyang Marke Dang Trelog Sanglog Zupa Tabu Shintu Chawa Ngemba Ngembe Dupe Gyu Tabu Laser. He's going to explain the five, but he has a small comment before that, okay? And we'll take a break in 3 minutes, I promise. Even if you're not a monk or nun, I'll give you some examples of wrong ways to make money. And he has a small list here, okay? Marke means to make money from selling flesh of animals, to kill, butcher, to be a butcher. To kill things and then sell their flesh. Okay? Marke. Mar means red, crimson. Ke means to profit. Marke means to make a living off of killing animals. Okay? And selling their flesh. Dang. Trelog. Trelog. Tre is an ancient word for, what do you call it? Those weights that you use on a scale? It's called tre. What do you call that? The box, like if you're old time, you weigh this, you weigh how many pounds of stuff they want, and then you have a weight on the other side. Okay. So either you mess around with the weights or you mess around with the scale. That's called Trelok or Sanglok. Zupatabu Shintu Chawa Ngembe Tube Gyutabu Laser. So you can't offer things that you bought with the money that you made from herding animals, selling liquor, selling weapons, like that, okay? You can't use that money to buy offerings, okay? Detabu chipa pua le, ma pua le. This is very powerful. He says, detabu chipa pua le, ma pua le. If you have a choice between making an offering that you bought with money that was made by hurting someone, or you have the choice of not making an offering at all, which do you think is better? Don't make it at all, he says. Better not to make it. Okay? Better not to make an offering. Okay? Chipe kedu puja shepa nyepa la jupe gupa gyawa seche gyepa la chaga. He said, kedu, if you're going to learn Tibetan, the word kedu is very important. Kedu means the Sanskrit equivalent of a Tibetan word. Kedu means, so if you say the word chupa, which means offering in Tibetan, if I ask you for the kedu, it would mean what's the corresponding Sanskrit original word? And it's puja, okay? Puja. Like Lama Chupa is called Guru Puja, right? So puja means an offering. But in Tibet, the root of the word puja was thought to mean to please. So the word offering in ancient Sanskrit meant something to please somebody. The word puja means to do something to please another person. Okay? That's the literal meaning of the word puja, which came to mean offering. Okay? So it wouldn't make sense to buy an offering through an action which would displease the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas. Okay? Got it? All right, maybe a few more than 3 minutes. I'm almost to the five. I'm going to give you the break and then we'll do the five. Detabu puna gyepa kalagyur. How could you imagine that a Buddha would be pleased if you bought a cupcake by slaughtering an animal and selling their flesh? Okay? Not possible. Unkyang dende gyu drup simba yuna rangshengi dikpa dape chir du puwa le. Then he says a very interesting sentence, okay? And I'll tell you a story. I learned all my Buddhism just by being around lamas, right? You learn more by being around your teacher all the time, if they're a good teacher, about what you should do, especially in gray areas, okay? So we had a gray area in New Jersey, like in 1978. And there was I was living with Mongolians, right? And they are Tibetan Buddhists. So I was studying with a lot of Mongolian lamas. And then Ken Rinpoche was there. And then a Mongolian family came to us and they offered money for the air conditioner for the temple. Okay? And then we took the money and we started to arrange for the air conditioning. Central Air, it was expensive. And then somebody came to us and said, do you know where they got the money? And we're like, no, we don't know how they got the money. Because most of the Mongolian families were very poor. They were refugees. And then they said they own a liquor shop. They own a liquor store. That's why they're the only comic family who has any money, you know? And then we're like, we had a moral crisis, you know? We're like, Rinpoche, what do we do, you know? They got all this money by selling liquor to people. Here's the answer, okay? This is a delicate, okay? Be careful. You have to be wise in how you apply this answer, but here's the answer. If someone has already purchased the thing, okay, and there's no way to take it back, you should go ahead and use it for the offering because it will help them clean themselves of the bad karma. Okay? If they already bought the air conditioner and it's already installed, you shouldn't rip it out. You should leave it there. And then every time the congregation is cooled, they will get a little good karma. Got it? And it will sort of clean the liquor selling karma. Got it? Okay. That's the conclusion. Pulek. So if they've already bought it and they offer it to you, and your choice is to throw it out, you should use it for their sake. Okay? All right? That's a little touchy. Then he goes into the five wrong livelihoods, okay? And we'll do that after the break. Okay. Oh, okay. It says, before you meditate, you must always look at your motivation. Kind of. Okay. All right. All right. Okay, here we go. We're going to do a tapkyu. Say tapkyu. Tapkyu means a horse race. And in the monastery, it means the lama didn't go through the material fast enough in the first half, and then he has to race through the second. The Dalai Lama does this a lot. He does the eight verses. He spends the whole time on the first one, and then he finishes the last seven in the last 7 minutes. Okay, here we go. These are loksonga. Loksonga means five ways of making a dishonest living, okay? And we have to try to avoid them. Say kasak, shoglong, nyepe nyepa tsuwa, topki jelwa, and tsulche. These are the Tibetan words for the five kinds of wrong ways of making a living, okay? And again, remember that these are in the context of monks and nuns, because his audience was 100% monks and nuns. Okay, well, mostly. He was one of the few lamas in Tibet who tried to teach lay people in large audiences, like 1,000 people at a time. And he got in trouble for it from the authorities, the religious authorities, for teaching lay people. But anyway, these five are in the context of monks and nuns, as you will see. They most relate to how to relate to sponsors. Okay, so here we go. Kasagni, the first one, which is kasag, by the way, that means to obtain things by flattery. Okay? Jindak soki tembu jimba rewe chindu rewe ka te te chepate. So you hope that some sponsor is going to give you some crummy little thing. So you tell them how handsome they are, etc. Okay, I was a diamond buyer for 15 years. This is one of the most powerful positions in the business, because you're dealing with millions of dollars every day. You're making deals on $10 million deals, you know. Most diamond buyers have a Swiss house and a swimming pool, you know, because they skim a certain percentage off. I'll buy your $1 million of diamonds if $20,000 goes into my bank account tomorrow, like that. And it's very, very common and very, very difficult. I think one of the reasons our company succeeded was that we were all honest. because there wasn't that leakage of corruption, you know. So anyway, but diamond sellers used to come to me and tell me how handsome I was and how smart I was and what a nice suit I had on. And then one day I said, let's be honest, you know, if tomorrow I lost this job, would you ever talk to me? And they're like, no. You know, so cut terter means to you know, compliment someone lavishly, okay? Then norsok jina loktoyen. And then because you have kissed their rear end, or you flattered them, then they try to give you things, okay? That's the monastic version, okay? A sponsor approaches the monastery, and you tell them how handsome they are, how smart they are, just because you're hoping that they will give more to the monastery, okay, or to you. That's kasak. That's flattery, using flattery. If you make money that way, or if someone gives you things that way, it's inappropriate to offer them because they're tainted, okay? On your homework, then you have to work out what would be the real-life job equivalent, okay, in America, okay? Number two. Yang dinde kuno mepa rangshin tangbu kake chena jinkyang lokso mingyur. He says, but it's not wrong to be persuasive when you are fundraising. Okay? He says, if you are sincere and you're trying to raise funds for something important, it's not wrong to be persuasive. Okay? That's not wrong livelihood. Okay? That's okay. Gandhi has an interesting section in his Atmakatha, his autobiography, which I read in Gujarati 100 years ago, or I started to anyway, about fundraising, about the ethics of fundraising. And you should read it sometime. It's very beautiful. It's a very beautiful essays in there. Anyway, Shoglong Ni. Number two is called hinting, okay? Hinting to a sponsor. It's called shoglong. Because you want either money or people's respect. You are looking for either donations or people's adulation. You say to sponsors who are around you, ngala tengab jama yute du chung kumbatu. So, look, in a Tibetan monastery, the only thing the monks eat is Tibetan tea with sampa. You know sampa? Sampa is parched barley that you you go out all night and you have a barley parching party and you sing barley parching songs together and you over a fire you what do you call it? You cook the raw wheat, the raw barley. What do you call it? Roast it, sorry. You roast it, and then it gets dried out, and then you grind it up. And that's half of a Tibetan monk's diet. They mix that every morning, afternoon, and evening with butter tea, and that's all they eat. A lot of monks survived the whole Geshe program on just tsampa. Anyway, so basically all they need is barley and tea. All right. So guess what? That's all the ngala tengab jama yute. You tell the sponsor, I'm really fortunate, you know, I have lots of tea and butter. You know, barley's a little tight. Okay. Got it? Hinting. All right. I got lots of butter and blocks of tea, but barley's been a little problem lately. Okay, topatuk servatabu. That's shoglong. Narlo kieki jimbe tsampa de shinde pembo chung means that tsampa you gave me last year was a big help. Okay? Jing tabu. Do that tsampa shuki longwa last year. Shuki means what do you call that? Imply that you need something without stating it directly. Okay? You're hinting that you need something, okay? How you apply that to an American office work situation is an interesting question, and you're going to answer that on your homework, okay? Yang ne de ki kunlong me pa rangshin tambo denda juna sholong de mingyur. If you are not being deceptive or insincere, it's not wrong to state directly to a sponsor, I have tea, I have butter, I don't have sampa, I need sampa. Okay, that's okay. That's not wrong. It's the hinting. It's the being deceptive or being insincere to the sponsor. So there has to be an element of insincerity. If you say directly, you know, I need this. I need a computer recently. My computer broke. And then Rebecca went on Facebook and raised the money. And that's fine. He told people he needs a computer. He doesn't have any money. So that's okay. Okay? That kind of thing is just honest whining and begging. Okay, all right. That's not wrong livelihood. It's wrong to be insincere about it. Okay. Number three, it's called baiting. Nyepe nyepa tsulwa. Literally in the Tibetan, it means to seek a gain by giving a gain. Okay, to seek a gain by giving a gain. Give something in the hopes of getting something back. Okay. Par chungu shik jinne sur de le lakshik yongtap chepayin. You give a little gift hoping to get a big one back, you know. And this is a big custom in China, you know. I've been told by countless Chinese friends that if I'm a monk and I'm teaching people in China and I expect to fundraise for projects, I should bring with me 14 gold Buddhas and 24 Tibetan paintings, and that's expected, and that it would be odd to ask people for money for a homeless center in America if you didn't offer them a little gold Buddha or something like that. That this is just normal thing, and I still haven't done it. I don't feel comfortable with it. It is the custom in China for ordained people to do that, but I don't feel comfortable with it. It feels too much like this to me. But there is a Chinese custom which is very sincere, where you might give a sponsor a book or something, and then you ask them, will you pay for our monastery? You know what I mean? And that's okay. If it's honest, then it's up front, you know. So anyway, Jindak Tabur Katatang Jatir Sokherone. So Lama Sipa Rinpoche, one of her lamas, sweet lama, very great lama. And he once told me, there's a thing in India called orange squash. Nobody had money in my time in India, people didn't have money to buy Coca-Cola or what do you call it? Soda drinks, right? Because they're too expensive for the poor people. And then you would make your own. So it's a British custom. You buy a bottle of concentrated sugar water with orange in it. And then you mix it with water. And you make it's like Kool-Aid or something like that. It's called orange squash. And it's a wonderful way to get diarrhea. Because they will invite you to their house and they'll pour out an orange squash. They mix dirty water. They mix black dirty water with the orange squash, and you can't tell it's dirty. And you drink it. And Rinpoche got our Rinpoche got very, very sick that way many times. So anyway, I met Lama Sopa one time in Serai, I think, and he said, "I said, how are you doing, Rinpoche?" He says, "Oh, this place has the most expensive orange squash in the world." You know, meaning every monk would come to him with a bottle of orange squash. And then ask for $50,000 for some new housing for the little monks, for the young monks, and stuff like that. Okay. So anyway, that's what this is about. He says, you offer a sponsor a katak. What's a katak? It's that Tibetan silk white scarf that you offer to people. They cost like 50 cents in the monastery. By the way, those of you who care, this might be the only place you'll ever find it spelled. Okay? If you care. And jatir means a small teapot, like a ceramic teapot. So Kierney, you offer the sponsor a little scarf or orange cloth, okay? Kierney, Nelen Chete, you offer them hospitality. Lo Putu, but deep in your heart, Tongo Laktak Sok Chembo Yongyu Rewa Chepa Laser, you're hoping you'll get some big offering from them, okay? Like they'll offer you a bunch of gold coins would be a typical thing or something like that, okay? You're giving a small gift in the hopes of getting something big. What do you call that? Baiting, okay. Tengsang Rangre Denda Chene Chakyu Am. Say Chakyu Shark. Chakyu Shark. Chak means iron, kyu means hook. And it's the Tibetan word for a fish hook, a barbed fish hook. And in the monastery, to set the fish hook means to approach a sponsor successfully. And it's an expression in the monastery. They'll say, why is this lay people in the monastery today? Oh, they're trying to chakyu shock them. You know, they're trying to get them to sponsor something. By the way, it's not evil. I mean, it's they need a hospital or they need a library or, you know, it's not insincere. They desperately need things. There are many monks who are dying from malnutrition when I was there. Many monks died from tuberculosis, which is brought on by not enough food. The only people who get tuberculosis in the West are drunks because they don't get enough nutrition, you know. So a lot of monks in my monastery had tuberculosis from lack of food. So, but still we would joke around and we would say, did you chakyu shock? Did you set the hook, you know? And chakyu ama shiktang means I really set the hook, okay? Then serene loksola nenten chebuyo. Then Pabongko Rinpoche says, that's wrong thinking. That's a wrong thing. That's a wrong way to think of other people. You shouldn't look at a person walking in to the monastery, judging how many donations they might give you, okay? And I think we have to be really careful with it. A lot of our projects, the refugee project, homeless projects, prison projects, countless other projects that we're doing, they depend on donations, right? We have to be careful in how we raise those donations. That's just a very serious karma. That's a very serious karma. And it's also important not to overwhelm sponsors, okay? You have to be very considerate in how you approach people for a donation. Sometimes people want to go, we're having a program in Japan and they want to go to Japan and they approach a sponsor. Or they're living in, southern Arizona and they have to come up to Phoenix and they ask, they're sniffing around for a place to stay, couch surf for a couple of weeks. And I made a rule, okay, and I will repeat the rule. You can couch surf for up to 3 weeks, and then you cannot do it after that. You know, if you're moving here or anywhere else where there's a center, and you don't have a job yet, you can couch surf for 3 weeks, okay, and that's the limit. Okay, then you have to go, you know, whatever you can find. Droma, is she here? Where is she? Probably out at, where's that place she works? Olive Garden or something. So Ningbo's sister moved to Phoenix because she wanted to be in the group. She got 3 jobs to support herself. She's a waitress, she's a RN, and she's a CPA. And the only job she could get was waitressing, and she took it. And she's working at it. And she does midnight shifts. And that's honest, okay? It's dishonest to like park in somebody's house, like sniff around a teaching like this and see who's new and might have an extra room or a couch and then raid their refrigerator all day and like that. That's not appropriate for us. That's wrong livelihood, okay? It's better that you go get an all-night shift in a restaurant, okay, at $4 an hour or something, than to impose on somebody else. That's not honest, okay? And I ask you not to support it. If people come up to you and ask you for that, you can quote Geshe Michael in the 3-week rule, okay? And it's better to, Rinpoche made me, he forced me to go to work. I didn't want to go to work. I had money. I inherited money. And he said, you need a job, you need a livelihood. And he told me which business to get into, and he forced me, and I fought it. And I had money, you know. We offered all the money to the refugees. He offered it all to the refugees. We did it together. And then he said, go to New York, get a job, you know, and it should be diamond. And I didn't want to. I desperately didn't want to, you know. And it was very tense for several months. And I said, why do you think I came to a monastery? You know, I have money. You know, I can stay here. And he said, no, you have to support yourself. And I think it's important. Michael Moore said that, I don't know how many years ago in New York, 1997. So now I support your view. It's just a little late, okay? It's important to support yourself and not to impose on other people, okay? All right. Tanga sene loksola nenten chepyo yan de kono me pa rangshin tamba jinda la nelen sambo chekyang lotso mingyor. It's not wrong livelihood to give a sponsor a sincere gift and thank them for helping. Okay. By the way, also if you ask a sponsor for money, and in our organizations, the finances should be transparent. So it's not wrong to give a small gift if it's sincere. Okay. Number four is called what? Forcing. Tokijawa. Tokijawa means twisting the sponsor's arm. Okay. The sponsor doesn't really want to give it, but you use your relationship and you sort of put pressure on them. Unfair pressure on them. Okay. Tokijawa ni midu shindu nenki lowa. Twist somebody's arm to get a donation. Shen la bugyu rang la gyurwa dang. It also means to take a donation which you divert to yourself. You take a donation for the Huichol people, and then you make up all these expenses of why it should. You know, I had to have a lunch on the day I went to make the donation. You know what I mean? And you pay for your own expenses, like that. Like politicians or something like that, okay? Some politicians. Jindak chegemu ngula chama chimba shindipembo chungshe shuki longwa tabu lasir. Or you create a competitive situation between sponsors. You go to one sponsor and say, he gave me 500. I can't believe you would do less than that. Okay, like that. You put pressure on sponsors by comparing them to other sponsors. Okay? We're almost done, okay? Have hope. I just want to finish the five tonight, because then we can go on tomorrow. Yang nidu kikuno mepa rangshin tambo dendar jun panni topjal domingyur. But it's not wrong if you're sincere and the sponsor asks you, how much did the other guy give? And you say 500. And you're not twisting his arm, but it's not wrong to tell him honestly what the other sponsors are giving. That's okay. Okay. Last one, which is called pretending. Okay, tsulchu means to pretend to be what you are not. Okay, to ask for a donation and pretend to be something you're not. All right. Here's the example. Shaktu kang chung chene jindak soki dundu. When you're alone at home, you do whatever the hell you want to, but when the sponsors are around, you act particularly religious. Okay. Means, and you're hoping they will be impressed and give you some little gift, you know. In Tibet, in China, when a person meets a monk, they often give them a red envelope with $50 in it or $100. This is normal. So you try to wear your robes especially straight and, you know, and you're looking for the red envelope and like that, okay? Ache, yandere kunlo meba kimba sunjun chena mirung nyambe shaktu dudule Tundok, Kawa, Chekyang, Tsuchum, and Dro. But if you are normally naughty, but in front of a sponsor, you don't want them to lose faith in Buddhism, it's okay to fake it. Okay. All right. So you're not such a great monk, but in front of lay people, it's a monk's vow, and it's a bodhisattva vow, not to disillusion people through your behavior. So you should try to be, it's not wrong to try to be better than normal in the presence of people who might be disillusioned if you're not, okay? And it's not faking. If the intention is to protect their faith, it's appropriate to try to be more subdued than you normally are. Got it? Okay. My Lama said that. Okay? That's his own Lama's advice. Who? Pabong Kumpache's Lama's advice. By the way, I'm not making this stuff up. I'm reading you straight, directly from a Buddhist text, which I have done for 30 years. Right? Every single teaching, directly from the text. Right? Okay? You know that. 20,000 pages translated. And I haven't taught anything else. Okay? Here we go. Deshindu Ranai Rabchungi Damki Domba Sungi Chetsam Karel Narel Tutangne Sonsoki Gyudubne Chopa Pukyam Penyun Ne Nyamik Chiwa Chung. If you engage in an enterprise which would damage your vows every which way, three sets of vows. What are the three sets of vows? Prati moksha vows, which are morality vows, basic morality vows. Second set of vows, bodhisattva vows, and then secret vows, tantric vows. Okay? I have, I don't know, 527 vows total. 364 monks vows. 253 monks vows, etc. Okay? And we have to check them every couple of hours. Right? Okay. And then to go out and do some kind of thing like business in which you are required to be dishonest, then it's better not to do it. And you shouldn't be offering that kind of money, right? Or you shouldn't buy offerings with that money, that kind of money. I'm going to stop there. He's going to get into... he has finished the discussion of making offerings from materials which were bought with bad money, dirty money. Okay? Now what's the second half? Bad motivation. He promised us two parts, right? First part was, don't make offerings that you've bought with dirty money. The second half is going to be, don't make offerings with which your motivation is lesser or unclean. Okay? Just to remind you on your homework, so now you can start on the second homework, right? The first question, which is kind of long, five kinds of wrong livelihood, right? And you're going to try to answer the question. Maybe that's a good thing in your discussion groups, okay? Figure out some real examples in business. It's a little hard in a business setting to distinguish between the five. I'm warning you, okay? Like sucking up to your boss is which of the five? You see what I mean? You got to think about it carefully. And it's good to put your mind on this. We should be clean with money matters because they are so sensitive. Sex and money are two things that people are very sensitive about, you know? People go crazy over financial irregularities and sexual irregularities. So we have to be super careful in those two things especially. So I think our groups, we should be careful in our accounting. Very, very strict, okay? I was forced to do the accounts for the monastery for many years. I was forced to do the accounts, okay? In the first 2 years, I had a partner. This was the original Pabongka Rinpoche's closest assistant. Okay? The Pabong Rinpoche, who died in 1941, left his assistant, and he was an old man when I got to the monastery. And we did the accounts together for the monastery. And he used a chipen and an abacus. You know? You know? He was switching, what do you call it? Those little beads on a string. And we had contests. I had a calculator. He had an abacus. And they'd say, go, you know, and I'd go like this, and he'd go, 457. And I'm like, 450, oh, dang. You know, and he would always beat me. Then I went to Geshe Thupten Rinchen, and I complained. I said, I'm so sick of doing accounts. It's like the most boring, stupid thing I can imagine. And I did all of Rinpoche's organization's accounts for 15 years, and all his taxes, you know. And I hate accounts, you know. And I went to Geshe Thupten Rinchen, and I complained. And I said, you know, I didn't become a monk to be an accountant. You know, I don't want to do this. And he said, do you know who the accountant was at Nalanda Monastery? Do you know? It was Nagarjuna. It was Nagarjuna, okay? The greatest philosopher of emptiness in history after the Buddha. In the 2,500 years, the greatest philosopher of emptiness ever. And I said, Nagarjuna? And I said, why? Why did they waste his time doing accounting? And they said, he said something interesting. He said the karma of misappropriating Dharma funds is so serious. The karma of making a mistake in the books of a religious organization is so serious. They thought only he could take the karma. Only he was good enough to take that karma if he made a mistake. Because any other person, it would destroy them. You see what I mean? They'd be talking about an honest mistake in math. They felt like no other monk should be exposed to that risk. You know? Right? She's the accountant for SAP, for the refugee program. No pressure. Okay, but we should be very honest. We should be very clean. We should be upfront. It's better to lose, you know, it's better you don't have any food and do the accounts clean. You know, I did that for many years. I didn't have any money. And keep the books clean, okay? That's just a very honorable thing to do. And if you have time, you should read Gandhi on that subject. He said another thing, and then I'll stop, I promise. He said, if you build a building or if you buy property for a purpose, such as Diamond Mountain, I'm thinking about Diamond Mountain or something like that, you should not have operating cash. He was against having stockpiles of funding. He said you should only collect the amount of cash that's needed for that month, and you should never collect more, and you shouldn't store money. And if a day comes when there's not enough people to give that month's money, the place should close. He said it's too dangerous to keep stockpiles of funding. You should work month to month. And if it ever happens that there's not enough people who want it to stay open, it should close. You know, it's very interesting. You know, he refused a lot of donations. Okay? I think that's sort of an interesting approach. Like that. Okay. All right. Anyway, we should be super clean. Okay? It's a pleasure. All right. Michael, you up for that? Okay. Pudhi jashi ne dhantam Rira vingshi inde jandhadi Sangye shindhu nikte uvagi Loku namda shinna jupasho Idam Guru Randa Vandana Kamheya Dayami Dike Voka Sanam Ishe Tsotsamshi
Sanang ishe le chumbe dhamma kuni dhapa cho.
Okay, sorry to keep you late. But I have to teach all this lightweight stuff all year, and this is my only chance to get to do an old-fashioned scripture. So, see you tomorrow.